Let's read it now. 1 Corinthians 9:18. What then is my reward? That's Paul's question. If I don't get the reward because I volunteered to preach, is there anything left for me? He says yes. He says that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel without charge, so as not to use the full right of the gospel or in the gospel. All right, again, we've talked about verse 17 in conjunction with Matthew chapter 10 and verse 41. And Paul says, look, I do have the hope of a reward. And we can, I think, look at that from at least three perspectives. We'll do that momentarily. When we think about the reward, you may recall in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8, Paul said, there's laid up for me something, the what of righteousness. There is the crown of righteousness, which the Lord is going to give to me at the end of time, and not to me only, but to all them that have loved his appearing. You see, one of Paul's earthly rewards in this verse, he says, I received a reward by preaching the gospel and not doing what? I was able to do the work of the preacher, and what didn't I do? All right, I didn't take any money. I didn't charge you. This was done without cost to you. It was done freely. It was done without expense. This is one of the places in the New Testament, we talk about this from time to time, we have a word, and then we add an A to it, or we add an un to the prefix at the beginning. What happens, for example, when we take the word theist and we add an A to it? The theist, the person who is the...
atheist.
All right, the person who is the believer in God now becomes an atheist. If we say that something is breakable and we add an un to it, the meaning then changes to, all right, something that could be broken is now unbreakable. So Paul takes this word which meant cost, he takes this word which meant charge, and then he puts that alpha prefix on there, the alpha privative, and that means that he's not willing to take any money. I think that you, as you look at this, have to go back and consider why he did that. It wasn't that he was someone who was, as they say, filthy rich. He was someone who wanted to stand out when it came to the false teachers. And even, we'll talk about this a little bit later, even though he did that, they used this against him. But Paul wants to run well as far as his Christian life. He wants to do well as far as his ministry. He wants to be the best possible example that he can. That should be true for us. So you have these other characters who are fleecing the sheep, so to speak. And Paul says, that was not me. I wanted to be distinct. I wanted to show you that this is true Christianity. And that is exactly what he did. So he spent a lot of time in the preceding verses talking about different illustrations to show that preachers could be paid. And then now he says, I didn't take the money. He didn't want that compensation. So he did not abuse the power in the gospel. That's the King James translation. Other versions might talk about his authority. The ASV says, use to my full right. And he's talking about living in that particular way, which was really distinct. If you go back and you start looking at first century slaves, did they get any kind of compensation? You're the slave in the master's household. Do you get anything for being a slave?
Probably not.
Well, you might not get any money, but at least you get what? All right, they're going to make sure that you have a place to live, and they're all going to make sure that you get food. You're going to be at least cared for in a basic way. But Paul said to the Corinthians, I did not take any material goods from you. So I'm someone who freely gives, and I accept nothing in return. Are there times when we can do that as a Christian, not looking at it from the standpoint that we have here, as far as being a preacher? We'll talk about that too a little bit later. But are there times where we can give something to someone and not ask anything in return? There are. And what would be some illustrations of that? How can we help somebody out and not ask for something in return?
If they're hungry, give them food.
I'm sorry?
If they're hungry, give them food.
All right. That might be one thing. Maybe we know the person, maybe not. But here's someone who has an empty stomach. They want something to eat. We help them out, and we don't want anything in return. We simply want to glorify God and do good. Sherman?
A lot of people here at the church building, they clean the church building, they mow the yards.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff.
We can be a volunteer. Sometimes those things involve the local congregation as far as items around the building or inside the building, and we don't want anything in return. We're not asking for money. We're not asking for praise, but these are simply things that we do. How else?
I think in evangelism, is an opportunity to do something without expectation. Even though we have the expectation that we will be rewarded one day, I don't know anybody that's ever been evangelistic that did it because they wanted a reward. They did it because they loved the person.
Yeah.
And they wanted to follow God's law.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you see that extending into the secular realm a little bit as well. Somebody says, you know, you need some help over at your house. You need, you know, somebody to come over and help with a wiring project or something. You need some help moving. I think several here have helped someone move. We don't want any money for that. It's just, this is something that we can do. God has given us the body. God has given us the time. He's given us the resources. and we want to assist you. And that's kind of what Paul was doing for the Corinthians. So that speaks well of people, especially for those who are Christians. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move down a little bit more? Tim, to you.
They may need someone to take them to the grocery store, yeah, which may be quite a ways away from their house. They may be, maybe they need somebody to take them to the doctor and back home again. And you can provide the time. And I've done that before and had people try to give me gas money for doing it. And, you know, you can forego that.
Yes.
You can just say, I'll take care of the gas. Don't worry about it. And I'll be there to get you.
Yeah, and that is a good thing to do. It's certainly a Christian thing, and it follows the model that Paul offers us here. Don?
Well, I think Tim said what I was going to say, basically, as Christians, you get probably more satisfaction out of doing something that the people that need help than the people that you're helping.
Yeah, that hits the nail on the head, and that's exactly what Paul did, and that was his point. I'm headed towards an eternal reward. Didn't get the earthly reward here as far as pay, but I got some things other than that. I feel really good about helping you folks, in this case, the Corinthians. That's exactly right. Anybody else? Mom, to you. What's up?
I know of a restaurant that last winter, they let it be known in the community that if somebody, one of their customers, wanted to buy a meal, a future meal for someone that was needy and needed them, they could buy one, and then they put up this ticket, free meal, displayed in the restaurant, so anybody that didn't have the money to eat, they could come in and take advantage of one of those free meals.
I actually saw a graphic, somebody posted that not too long ago, where there were, let's say, maybe a dozen different little tickets on the wall, and those dozen tickets each contained a meal that somebody had paid for. Here's a hamburger, French fries, and a Coke, or you know, here's a cheeseburger, or whatever it was at this particular restaurant. And if you wanted to, you could go in and grab one of those tickets and present that, because the meal had already been paid for, then the person would get the meal, whatever was on the ticket. So again, Paul felt like that he was able to do this. He knew that he had sacrificed in the interest of others. It's one thing to good. It's one thing to do that kind of thing. But what happens if some sacrifice is involved? Does that better the feeling a little bit? I mean, not in a proud way, but you know that I actually did give something. You know, I didn't get $5 back in gas, but to me, $5 really wouldn't make that much difference. But if we sacrifice in some other way, and God is certainly pleased with those kinds of things. Anything else before we switch gears here? Tim, to you.
Well, when the scriptures say laying up treasures for yourself in heaven, that's a good way to do
it. It is. It is exactly right. Therese?
Sometimes we don't have the money to put in the offering plate, but we have our time where we can do things, even if it's helping someone that's stopped on the side of the road. We do it out of the kindness of our heart, not out of, I want you to give
A lot of different ways to do what we're talking about. Very good. One source made this observation, which I think is worth sharing. He said, some in emulation of Paul, that is to follow Paul, think that they should engage in secular pursuits to make a living and preach without pay, where the church is weak or non-existent. This is a noble aspiration that few have fulfilled. In most cases, such people become involved in full-time tent making and preach a little on the side. Paul spent most of his time in sharing the good news of redemption and very little time in working with his hands. Not many men with families to support can maintain that kind of balance. And that is right. I said before that it looks like in future years, unless some things really change, we're going to have far fewer full-time preachers. A lot of the guys, I think, are already starting to train to be kind of bivocational. They're going to end up supporting themselves for a lot of years in the ministry. But it's like anything else. You can only burn the candle at both ends for so long, and you can only do that so well. So if you're trying to work two jobs, I spent about a year at the Humber plant working two jobs, so I, you know at least to a small degree what that's like, and that is very, very difficult. Preaching can be a full-time job. It is a full-time job for a lot of people, and Paul did do it, but he is in a somewhat distinctive category. As you think about him making tents, he would have had people come, a lot of opportunities as he's there, either working on the tent to talk to people or people coming into the shop that he was working at. So he was in a somewhat distinctive category. But a lot of times you have that particular issue. There's also this problem, which another source noted, and it's true. I'll give you the quote. He said, some churches have been hurt by hearing preachers whom they did not pay. Members grew accustomed to receiving something for nothing and failed to practice biblical liberality. That's true. It's nice to do things, but if people get into, I mean, it's almost like the government. It's nice when the government hands out some free stuff. Everybody likes freebies. But what happens if the government gets into the business of just handing out and handing out and handing out, and there's just almost no end to it? What happens? Yes. And in this particular case, some preachers have said, I will preach for you for free. And that goes on for a long time. That becomes a problem. And Paul in the second letter, 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 13, actually recognized that this had become an issue at Corinth. He said that I have wronged you in this matter. I should have taken the pay. And he still was glad that he didn't. But it can become a problem where people get so dependent on something that it just doesn't turn out to be a good thing. You can actually cause people to, and that's a tough thing in the mission field. You go in, and missionaries have often faced this. If you show up in the mission field, you're trying to teach people about Christianity, and one of the first things that you talk about is money, what are they going to think?
They're going to think that's the only reason you're
there. Yeah, that's why this guy is knocking on a doorstep, right? So you go in there, you find support from the States. But if you never cover that, you never get them to the point where they realize that they need to be giving so they can be evangelistic, so they can have somebody perhaps work with them, then what kind of congregation do you have? One that is still spiritually mature and they're lacking significantly in part of what we know as New Testament Christianity. So it does become a fine line sometimes. You also find anything that you want to add or ask before we make another point? Down to you.
People that know birds and what, when to feed them and not to feed them, they're asking people, don't put out bird feeders in the spring. And I said, why, you know, or summer? Because feed them out, if you give them in the spring, they'll expect to do that for the whole year. And they won't go looking for food. And I thought, I never would use that in a Bible study, but here I'm using the Bible study.
Yeah. Well, I think you had told me some years back that when you run to Alaska, you'd seen the eagles. When you'd been to Alaska, you'd seen some eagles. They didn't have to go out and hunt for food.
Right.
People were feeding them, and they looked scrawny. They were not healthy creatures. Yeah. And that in the animal world, that works out that way as well. So people can become dependent on something, and some very bad habits can be formed. And that's really unfortunate. Anybody else? All right, let's make this point too. Have you ever known a preacher who insisted on his rights? I don't think we have a huge problem with that in the church. But maybe with a denominational guy, ever see somebody who has insisted on his rights?
You mean like free housing and free gas for the car?
Well, maybe. I'll tell you what I saw recently on social media. There was this guy, I think the country was Africa. This guy is on something like a big stretcher. I mean, it was bigger than that, a platform. And there is a chair on the platform, a high back chair. And the preacher is sitting on the chair. Now, if this was true, and I have no way to verify that it was accurate or not, but it looked like that was a claim. The preacher was insisting that he be carried until the congregants bought him a car. I could not believe it. I have seen some strange things in my life, but my feet are not going to touch the ground until my folks buy me an automobile. I deserve four wheels. And here you got these old guys, you know, kind of hunched over trying to carry this guy to wherever he was going to go. So again, let's go back, let's circle back and ask the question again. Preachers insisting on the rights. I've seen that. There have been some people who have gone in, this was kind of, you know, before, yeah, you got veterans and some other people, senior citizens, they get the discount. We see that sometimes, don't we? Bad attitudes with seniors. I'm a senior, I want my discount. You know, give me my 5%, knock off my 10%. Well, there have been some preachers who have done that same kind of thing. Before we had Lowe's and some other home building places like Home Depot, there would be in town the local, you know, 84 Lumber or wherever it was that people would go to buy those kinds of supplies. And they would insist, I'm a preacher, I deserve X percent off. Or you find sometimes preachers insisting on special parking spots. Or they might insist on having a certain title applied to them. And if you don't use that particular title, they're upset. They get really, really angry. So we do see that same kind of thing. But here, as you look at the principle that Paul's laying out in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, he says, I've got the right to be paid, but what am I doing with that right? I'm saying no. don't pay me. And he was willing to forego those rights. We'll get into that a little bit more as we see verse 19 and following. So it's interesting that he was willing to surrender some of those rights. Steve, sorry.
You were talking about, it sounds like the opposite of a servant mindset.
Absolutely right. I want to be served rather than serve. There are people who have that attitude in a lot of different ways. It doesn't have to be in the area of religion, but this is wrong, and this is certainly not the example that Paul gave. Excellent observation. Anybody else? Dolores?
I may have used this example before, but it left quite the impression on me that I worked with the congregation in Bethel, and they had a new preacher coming in, and he said, now, I have a lot of books, so I'm going to need a lot of bookshelves. And there was only like one little set, and they said, how many do you need? And he said, well, actually, this whole wall, I need you to build bookshelves. And they said, well, we'll see what we can do to get that accomplished. And a week went by, and they didn't have it done. So he brought his books to the church building in his office, left the door open where everybody could see that he had gone and gotten liquor boxes to put his books in. And then he said to me, that should hurry him up a little bit. You think I'm going to get my bookcases?
Wow.
So it's like, video.
Yeah, there are people, they feel like they are entitled, or they feel like people should just bend over backwards 24/7 and do whatever they want. But it's sad, but there are people who have that kind of attitude, and that's really what you would expect to find associated with the false teachers. That it? Okay, let's pick up with 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 19. He says, for though I was free from all men, I brought myself under bondage to all, that I might gain the more. We know, as we look at the New Testament and secular history, that in the ancient world, there were some people who were free, and there were some people who were not free. They were slaves. Paul was one of the free, and he also was one who was a Roman citizen. When you look at the word which is translated free, that is expressed with the present tense, one source said it means the man who is truly free shows his freedom in being free for the service of God. That is a great point. That's also a really important point for us. As we look at our nation, are we very free, extremely free, compared to a lot of the other people in the world? Yes. We are. All right. If we have that status as free people, then what should we be trying to accomplish in the spiritual realm? All right. We should try to use that freedom to spread God's word and encourage people to become Christians. It's kind of part of my history now. I don't know that I'll ever do it again. But when I was younger, I made, you know, a fair number of trips overseas. In part because that felt like a spiritual responsibility. If I had the ability to go, had the knowledge to go, and I had the freedom to go, and there were opportunities that could be utilized, then you take that freedom, you take the resources that you have, and you use them. Because one day, it may not be possible, the resources may not be there, the health may not be there, the country might be closed, there might be several other things that make that kind of travel and that kind of work impossible. But Paul says, look, I'm a free man, have a lot of different opportunities to serve God, and I'm going to maximize those. One source said, free from all men. What a weight these words carry. Paul had broken with his entire past. He pretty much left his nation and confused, I think, some people because of how he was living. He was someone who had learned to endure hate, face danger, persecution, to look death in the face again and again. Depending on Christ, he had unlearned completely to bow to the opinions and the will of men because he was a free man and he wanted to use his rights. As you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 19, he says, yes, I'm free, but at the same time, what have I done? I have brought myself into a state of servitude or bondage or slavery. Now, that's the same word that he used over in the book of Romans, chapter 6 and verse 18, as well as Romans chapter 6 and verse 22, when he was talking about being a servant or a slave of righteousness, a servant of God. You also find that word being used in Titus chapter 2 and verse 3, where Paul talked about not being enslaved or not a servant to wine. Why does Paul say he became a slave? He had the freedom, but he renounced it. Now the end of verse 19, to do what? That I might gain the more. What do you think he's trying to get more of? People try to get all kinds of things in life. He wants to gain more. He wants to gain more people for Christ. He's looking for more converts. When you start looking at what he has to say here, you begin to find that he didn't convert everybody that he met, just as we're not going to, but he did want to save as many people as possible. We're going to see a little bit later, this is going to be in the 22nd verse, the end of the verse, he says he's going to become all things to all men, and he did that. His word for gain here in verse 19 is used elsewhere in the chapter. We're going to see it two times in the next verse, 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 20, and then we're also going to see it in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 21 and 22. Outside of these passages, you're only going to find it in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 8. Here, one source defined it as souls are won in the kingdom of God through the preaching of the gospel or through righteous living. That, to me, is a valuable point. We sometimes think about the teaching that's done to convert people to Christ, and that certainly is important. The gospel is God's power to save, Romans 1:16. But we also find that people can be influenced to become a Christian through a righteous life. That should be more and more evident as we look at our world right now. We have a lot of people doing a lot of things. I don't know about you, but every time, I have a hang up on this. But every time people start talking about women, I keep in my mind kind of going back and thinking, all right, you know, people say on the one hand, what's a woman? And then on the other hand, they're going over here and saying, well, it's Women's Day or we got to protect women's rights. I'm thinking, how do those two things go together? If you can't figure out what a woman is, how can you then elevate women or talk favorably about them? And if you make those points to people, you're going to seem to be a little bit like an odd duck in the world because everybody else is sort of swimming the same way in the stream. But if you think as a Christian, talk as a Christian, point things out as a Christian, try to train your mind when you're thinking as far as Bible passages, trying to look at life through that spiritual lens, that will make you somewhat distinctive. One source defined gain as a technical missionary term that it alternates with the word save in verse 22. So this is kind of a paradox in Paul's life here. On the one hand, he's saying, I'm free from all men. On the other hand, he's saying, I'm under slavery, I'm bound to all men. Luther said it this way, a Christian man is a ministering servant in all things and subject to everybody. That is a true paradox, that we are subject to everybody, but at the same time, we're still trying to be a ministering servant. So Paul doesn't say, I let all men or any man make a slave of me. That was not the point. Anything that you want to add or ask before we take a little jaunt to another place? Don, and then we'll take Gary's thought.
If I read this right, Paul was not taking any money or anything from the people there.
Correct.
Because there were people there that were doing that.
Yeah.
And expecting money, expecting some payback to them. Now, from a standpoint of being Christians, if we tell people that we're Christians and then we go out and we do something that's not Christian, it's like Paul is lying when he's saying he's not taking money. So we have to be careful as Christians. When we talk to some people about becoming a Christian or living a Christian life, is we don't do things that they might be able to say, oh, look at God, what he's doing. It's not Christian when you do it.
Yeah, I mean, and that ties in with the point that I was trying to make just a couple minutes ago, that the world is swimming this way. Most of the people are thinking this way, even though they're not always avoiding contradictions in some of what they say and think. And if we swim in that same stream, if we agree with the thinking, if we follow with, you know, for example, you know, you see this stuff as far as, you know, the Pride Days and so forth. Christians, sometimes brethren will jump on board with that stuff and say, you know, we like that stuff. We support you. You know, your choice is not my choice, but you just kind of take your own path and good for you. No, can't do that stuff. We've got to make sure that our thinking is in line with Scripture, and we stay committed to that. Gary, to you.
In my mind, the dividing factor of the paradox is the reason for the service,
yeah,
or the intent of the service. You know, if we're being forced to, then we're a servant, but not by choice. But so he is free from all men, but he's not free of service because of the intention of serving for God.
Absolutely right. He had that experience on the road to Damascus, and he just felt like he had to change his life because of that. He was shown that he was wrong. He was grateful for the mercy and the grace that God extended to him, and it's, I have set my course. Very good. One source said, share the quote with you here, normally men are not critical of those who work without pay. Would you agree with that? Typically, if somebody works without pay, folks are not critical of them.
Yeah, that's
generally true. But in this situation, the laborer is obviously not seeking his own welfare. Though Paul worked for free, his paying his own way was used against him. It's kind of interesting, and it goes back to the fact that if someone is going to criticize you, Jesus being a prime example, no matter what you do, are you going to be faulted by some? I mean, you can live a perfect life, and there's still going to be some people who don't like you, and they're going to complain about some stuff. And that's what Paul goes through. I mean, can you imagine this guy? He says, look, you know, paid my own way to come to Corinth. I taught you guys the gospel, gave you the best possible information, and never wanted anything from you. I mean, you would think that nobody would complain about that. You would think that everybody would be enthused about him. But that is simply not the case. Well, as you begin to piece the pieces together a little bit, you remember we talk about the contribution a little later in the book, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2? It looks like, as you look at 1 and 2 Corinthians, that there were people who were saying Paul was a real crafty guy. I mean, this guy was real sly. Yeah, he didn't take any money when he was at Corinth, but guess what? His hand, if it wasn't in the left pocket, it was in the right pocket. How did Paul get his money? Oh, the guy was clever. Didn't want a weekly check, but what did he want? He's out there gathering money from all these churches. Says it's going to be taken down to Jerusalem. What happens to the big pot? Some of it goes in Paul's pocket. And that's what was being alleged. You begin to see some of that in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 14 through 18. That they said, Paul, he is someone who uses guile. He's saying this. It would be like the old saying, don't listen to what a politician says. Watch what a politician does. And that's kind of the charge that's being made against Paul. So he does refute that as you look at these two letters. Jesus really illustrated this point very well in Matthew chapter 11, verses 16 through 18. Jesus compared himself to John the Baptist and said that we have two different styles. Jesus came and he was sort of the festive one. He was willing to go out to the gatherings that people had and spend a lot of time with the sinners. John the Baptist, he's not really the fellowship kind of guy. John's not the potluck kind of guy. John's out there in the desert. He's out there praying. He's out there preaching. He's out there telling the sinners to repent. So you have two very different approaches. Now, is Jesus' approach better than John's? I mean, if you have a more outgoing and festive personality, is that a better personality than the guy who was out there focused on sin and judgment? It's not. I mean, for some it might work better. But they're both perfectly fine approaches. It's just that this one is focused, or his personality is this way. This other one is focused on this, and he has a much different personality, and they're both effective, sometimes for different people, and both fine in the eyes of God. Tim?
He said, be ye imitators of me, even as I am
of Christ,
an imitator of Jesus. That being said, then we can look past Paul right to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And see all the things that Jesus did for people. He fed people, he healed people, he brought people back to life, he gave them hope for the future, and he never asked a penny from anybody. And we're going to be a whole lot lesser degree of doing that because we don't have the abilities that Jesus had, but that's what we should be trying to do. The same thing. We should be trying to help people here on this earth as best we can, and we should be trying to steer them in the right direction spiritually.
That's true. Yes, we should. And we should be prepared for some accusations when it comes to our motivation. We don't have a lot of information as far as Jesus in that particular point, but you can imagine, especially with the religious leaders, that there were probably some people who said, oh, he's just trying to get a follower. He's just trying to get attention. He's not asking for money now, but you just watch. He will down the road. Because those are the kinds of things that people typically say when they don't like what someone is doing. And, I mean, it's just as old as humanity. Donald, take your hand after, I think, Betty.
You have the idea that some people
jealousy and envy sometimes are part of it. But you're exactly right. There's a lot that goes into this. And ultimately, I think Gary touched on this well as far as the motivation. It comes down to the motivation. What's your purpose behind it? Don, to you?
Well, chapter 9, verse 11.
Okay, back up a little bit.
If we have sown spiritual things among you, is it not much if we reel material things from you? What's he mean by that?
Okay, spiritual things would be the gospel, the truth.
I know that.
All right, and the material would be a paycheck. So if we came and worked and taught you the gospel, if you look at it in terms, you were a school teacher for a while, right? Okay. All right, going back a couple years. But if you were a school teacher, would you expect compensation?
Compensation?
Money. Would you expect a paycheck?
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's a similar thing. Paul says, I was your school teacher. In this particular case, you weren't learning math and English and science. You were learning about God and his word. And because of that, compensation was appropriate, but I didn't take it.
But the verses we're talking about now, he's saying, I'm not taking anything from you.
Right. Yeah. He was entitled to it.
Entitled to it, but he's not taking it. But
correct.
He says, I'm entitled to it.
Yeah.
Well, I can't put those two together. Help me out.
Okay. He's had a very lengthy discussion as far as he had the right to do that. But he didn't exercise that right. And he didn't exercise that right because he knew that could be a problem. Going back for just a second to revisit what we said before, remember the illustration as far as the missionary that goes to a foreign country and starts asking for money? That becomes a real problem. And if you have somebody in that area who's saying, oh, he's just here for the money, you now take what was a problem and you have a gigantic problem. And with these false teachers, they were making some bad statements about Paul. They were claiming he was in it for the money and so forth. So Paul just said, look, when it came to compensation, I was hands off. I funded my own way, even though I had the right to pay.
Okay, so basically he said, in this here, he has the right to say it, but he's saying in the other verses that he's not going to do it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. That it? Okay, let's move down to 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 20. Here he says, and to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain Jews. To them that are under law as under law, not being myself under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. So that's kind of a mouthful. But remember that Paul's talking about trying to gain people or convert people. That's what we've got back there in verse 19. Now he says, when I was with the Jewish people, how did I act? How did I behave? What did I do?
Like one of them.
All right, I live like one of the Jews. What's the old saying? When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Well, that's not quite what Paul was doing, but at least in principle, it's kind of the same. As a Jew, if he was going to live as a Jew, practically what would that have meant? How would he have carried that out? If you're going to go back 2,000 years in time, and you're going to be living among the Jewish people, and you want to blend in, what are you going to do? Whoa, that opened it up, didn't it? Start over here on the left. Sure. So when Saturday comes, when the Sabbath comes, you're going to be out there chopping firewood? No. Now, do you believe that's okay as a Christian? Yes. But you know if you do that, when it comes time to talk to that fella, the Jew, who saw you doing that, how far are you going to get? You're not going to, because he's thinking you deserve the death penalty. So any Bible study with him, that's off the table. So you're not going to be doing work on Saturday. Gary, I think you flagged a hand or flashed a hand.
That was going to be my example.
Okay, very good. So what if somebody says, hey, we're going to circumcise our child? Would you go to the circumcision party?
Sure.
Okay, I'll come. Now, you're thinking in your own mind what? I'm not going because this is a religious celebration. I'm not going because this is what God requires. But I'm going with the hope of what?
Teaching them the truth.
Well, you know, friendship, teaching them the truth, those kinds of things. So there were a lot of things. What happens when it's time for potluck day? Are you going to have pork on the table? Is that going to bring your potluck dish, be your potluck dish? You're not going to bring pork. You're going to respect the Jewish food laws. You're going to follow those social, you're going to follow those religious customs as much as possible to maximize your personal influence. Now, having said that, are you going to compromise the gospel? No. And that's kind of where we go back to what we were talking about before. There are going to be some things that you do not do. You're friendly, you're respectful, but you are also trying to ensure that you follow what is found in Scripture. You do have an example of this with Titus and Timothy. Which one was circumcised? Titus or Timothy, do you remember? Paul took who and circumcised him, Timothy or Titus? All right, it was Timothy who was circumcised. Then when we get over to the Galatians, the letter that Paul wrote to them, he says, Titus, who was with me, he was a Gentile, was not circumcised. He said, we were not going to stand for that, even though that is what the false teachers wanted him to do. So there are limits when it comes to evangelism and blending in. Can you think of some ways today that we would want to use what Paul's talking about here as far as blending in with society? Some things that we would do that would not be counter to the gospel that we might not ordinarily do if we didn't have any hopes of converting someone? How can we apply the principle? Things that we would do to better a relationship with somebody, maybe even in the spiritual realm, but we wouldn't view that as something that we would offer or do when it comes to service to God. Gary?
Well, I would think most people here wouldn't purposely move into a dangerous neighborhood in a large city, but we know someone from Connecticut that did because his hope was to spread the gospel in that area where he felt he really needed.
Okay, yeah, you know, you don't want to move into an area so you can buy drugs. You don't want to move into an area where you can rob people, but you do want to reach people, perhaps focusing on the inner city. And, you know, people, you know, realize that. They ask the question, we want to come down here because we care about the people. So we're going to live in this particular place. We're going to shop in the places where you shop. We're going to do our very best to blend in. So from an evangelistic standpoint, in modern terms, that would be true. Anything else come to mind? As far as blending in? Nothing else? Well, it does become a little difficult. You may have had this particular experience. I don't like this question when it comes up because I don't think that there is an answer to it that's true every single time. Anybody, as they were raising children, ever have somebody, a young person, child, son or daughter, that was dating somebody and talking to the person about becoming a Christian, and the person was religious, the person said, well, I'll come to your church if you come to my church. Any parent ever go through that? If you have, how do you handle that as a parent? Do you forsake the assembly and go with the person? I have kind of come, and I don't like this, but I've kind of come to the point where I say it depends. You know, because we do have Paul saying, I became a Jew. There were some things that he attended. Now, I don't think that he probably missed Sunday services or a regular assembly, but it does sometimes become a little tricky. And Paul does have some times, we'll talk about that maybe tonight, maybe a little bit later, where in the book of Acts, you see a couple of instances where things do seem a little murky for him as far as a couple of the things that he did. But we do want to do our best as far as trying to go along with people so that we can help them become Christians. There are some things that we do want to avoid. There are some things that are wrong. We don't want to bully people. That has happened sometimes with young people. They have been pushed or bullied into conversion. That's wrong. We don't want to brainwash people. That's also inconsistent with Scripture, as is any kind of other manipulation. We've said before, God's power is the gospel to save, Romans chapter 1 and verse 16. Sometimes, though, people do use things that God has not authorized. For example, preaching is the way that he has chosen to convince people of the truth. You do have some people focused on some other things, though. Sometimes worship is turned into drama and entertainment over preaching. You do find that there are some religious teachers that have used various gimmicks to get people to their religious group. There are limits on evangelism, and we want to be very, very careful. Truth and love should be the two guiding principles, Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 15. Preaching in the synagogue was one of Paul's techniques. We know that as we go back to Acts chapter 13, for example, verses 33 and 34. The Bible says, as his custom was. So as Paul is in the synagogues, he's able to listen to the Jewish scriptures that are read. There surely were some times where people were able to offer some input. He could have asked some questions. He could have pointed some things out as far as prophecies concerning that Jesus was the Son of God. He was not bound to always use the same teaching techniques, and that's also true for us. We want to look at the people where we are and employ the best strategies. And there are a lot of ways. It's just like raising a child. If you have more than one child or you're looking at grandkids, you know that children require different techniques. They just don't all parent the same. And that's also true when you're dealing with people when it comes to evangelism. What may work here as far as a particular study, and we've seen that over the years. If you go back and you look at the Jewel Miller film strips, probably tens of thousands of people were converted with that. But if you look at them today, you've got pictures which are back from the 1950s. those pictures probably don't register for a lot of people because of how the people are dressed and some of the graphics there. So people are constantly updating things. It's just like anything else. If you go back and you look at the packages from 70 years ago, and there would be exceptions. Some of them may not have changed the label. But packaging from 70 years ago to today, are you going to find some differences? Why?
You've got to keep up with the times.
Well, yeah, but what do we mean by that when we say keeping up with the times?
People's...
Yeah, you think about, for example, size. There used to be sometimes things that were shipped in the mail that were large, bulky containers, but now people have said what? Shipping's expensive, right? So before we were going to give you this big plastic tub and ship it to you, but now we're going to put it in some kind of disposable container. Much cheaper for us, maybe better for the environment. You find that labels, designs have been changed. Our world is always in a state of flux or change. Tastes change, colors change, all kinds of names change sometimes. It's the same product. And I want to speak carefully here. It's the same gospel, but sometimes we need to package it a little differently. There was a time where DVDs were big. Now, if you look at some people, do they really know what a DVD is? Not so much. I mean, you start talking about CDs and some other things, and they, you know, what is that? You know, everything is streaming now. And if you're not streaming, young people say, you know, that's old technology. We want the new stuff. And it does require some updates from time to time. Paul had kind of a multicultural ministry. He had to make a lot of decisions as he was working with Gentiles. He was working with Jews. We do have, and this is where I'm going to stop, two things that we have in the book of Acts that I mentioned to you earlier. We've got the vow at Cenchrea in Acts chapter 18 and verse 18. There were some people who asked, how could Paul take a Jewish vow? I think the answer goes back to what we're talking about here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. He was willing to become a Jew as long as he didn't cross the line where he violated something when it came to Christianity. And then you also have the example in Acts chapter 21 and verse 26, he financially supported a vow. Once again, something that was very Jewish, but able to do that so that he could blend in well.